It doesn't kiss you back. Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think.
Hi there. Welcome back to Enjoy Life. Enjoy yourself. Don't postpone the joy. I'm Naomi Joy. That's my real name. And we're here at WCWP 88.1 FM and WCWP.org on the net. And I am so happy and excited to finally meet Elaine Wolf.
Well, Naomi, it's such a pleasure to be here at WCWP. I've so been looking forward to chatting with you and getting to know you.
Well, what happened was at my library, I saw a flyer. And it said, anti-bullying author is going to be speaking on her novels. And I've always been very concerned about the concept of bullying. As a teacher for my life, career teacher, I've seen bullying in many forms in the schools. And also I've seen bullying in other forms of life, which Elaine is going to address. And what do we do to deal with it? I don't like to say combat it because it sounds like we're fighting. But I was so thrilled. In fact, many, many years ago, I read a book about bullying, which was quite an interesting book about what to do. And I wrote to the author, and she actually put me on her cover because she said, as a teacher, I said, this is a very authentic book with some good suggestions. So I found out how to reach the author of these two books, the names of which are?
Camp and Danny's Mom. They're both novels. As Naomi said, I'm now known as the anti-bullying novelist, and I've embraced anti-bullying as my mission. I'm so glad that my novels have given me this amazing platform, this ability to continue to make a difference.
Well, I think that idea of make a difference is another idea that all of us should embrace, make a difference in different ways, but we can all make a difference in somebody's life.
Absolutely. Right. And I think, Naomi, especially as we get older, I know you may have some seniors who are listening in, and as we get older, I think it's so important to embrace a passion, to find a purpose, and to stay involved, and as you said, to make a difference. Perhaps we'll be able to talk about that in a little while.
I'd love to. Elaine wrote these novels in the last year, Elaine? How long did it take you to write them?
Well, actually, I wrote these novels quite a while ago, Naomi. I wrote Danny's Mom first, even though it was the second one published. Then I wrote Camp, which was the first one published. And you know what's so interesting and rather sad is that I wrote these novels right after I retired from the school district. And because I set one novel, Camp, in a girls' sleepaway camp, and my other novel, Danny's Mom, in a high school, it became impossible not to write about bullying. However, when
That's interesting. It sort of came from a natural...
Absolutely. I did not start out to write anti-bullying books. I didn't start out to become the anti-bullying novelist.
Let's go back. Let's go back. Did you write before? When you were young, was this something that you enjoyed doing? Where did this come from?
I've always been a closet writer.
A lot of us are closet things.
So finally out of the closet. You see, out of the closet.
Out of the closet. And what Elaine had said to me on the phone when I called her and we had this wonderful conversation, I believe I understood correctly that you were working, and I believe your husband, Ira, said to you, okay, Elaine, enough with the working, we can manage. You know what? Go do what you want to do. Do I have that
well,
right?
Well, you absolutely have it right. And I'll tell you an interesting story about that, Naomi. I was sort of overwhelmed in the job I had. I was a district language arts chairperson in a public school district on Long Island.
What is a language arts person?
So reading, writing, listening, speaking skills. So I was a reading teacher in a high school and a middle school. Prior to that, I was a special ed teacher. And I got my administrative certification here in New York and was promoted to oversee all the reading programs district-wide and work with the English teachers. It was a marvelous job. I had the amazing pleasure of getting good books into the hands of students, teachers, and parents. However, it was an incredibly time-consuming job, and I had no time to write. And one day, I had a year-end evaluation in the superintendent's office, and after all the praise and the things that made me feel so very good about what I was doing, he mentioned that he wanted me to do even more the following year. And I came home that day, and I was beside myself. You mentioned my husband, Ira. He took one look at me and said, "What happened?" And I said, "I don't think I can work any harder. And I've never even had time to do the writing I want to do on my own time."
So you knew you wanted to write.
I always knew I wanted to write. Well, that night, Ira and I went to see The Truman Show. It was a Friday. We went to see The Truman Show. I don't know if you recall, there's a scene at the end of that movie where Truman is trying to sort of bust out of this bubble that circumscribed his life, his fake universe that he thought was real, of course. And I saw Truman at the edge of his world trying to push
about,
out.
We're not talking about Harry Truman. This was a movie many people may not be aware of.
Thank you.
About a young person who tried creating a fantasy world to live in. And he's trying to
bust out. It's a Jim Carrey movie. It's really worth seeing.
It's an excellent movie.
When I saw the Jim Carrey character trying to bust out, I turned to my husband in the theater and said, "That's just how I feel." And I walked out of that movie and I said, "It's time. I'm going to submit my letter of resignation on Monday."
Just like that.
Just like that.
You just had one of those epiphanies.
Exactly.
I've done it enough already. Let me do something else. Let me change my life. And of course, you had the encouragement of your husband, which is really important. As Bonnie Max said, she's a teacher of writing here in Great Neck. It was her husband who encouraged her to get out there. She had told him she wanted. She said, "I'll have another child." They already had three. And he said, "No, you know what? Enough. You need a life. Go do something." And exposed her. I don't know what to say. She just flowered into acting and writing and all kinds of wonderful creative things. And
well, wonderful is the word. You have the right word for that. Wonderful creative endeavors. And I think it's so important for all of us.
Well, how does the writing come? I always was curious about writers. I mean, does it just come out of you?
I wish for me it just came out of me, Naomi. If you ask 100 writers how each wrote her novel or his novel, you're going to get 100 different answers. So I can only tell you what's true for me.
Because you had not really written anything of any length.
No, I had worked on a series of short pieces. I took some writer's workshops over summers. I took some Saturday workshops. I had a series of short pieces, but I had never done a novel. I actually took some novel writing workshops as soon as I decided to leave the school district.
So you knew you wanted to do this because a novel is a commitment.
Is it ever?
A short piece is one thing, but you really have to get into that whole 250 pages or whatever.
You know what it's like to write a novel? You have to be willing to be out in a boat and a big ocean in the middle of nowhere for 2 years with your characters. So you had better really care about your characters because you are going to be stranded on that boat. Not quite Life of Pi with a Bengal tiger, but sometimes almost approaching that feeling. It's a tremendous commitment. It's a tremendous commitment and a tremendous joy. And
creating these characters, it's almost like giving birth to a child. I mean, you are
absolutely. Except this took a lot longer.
This took longer than nine months, right?
And in fact, now that I have two novels that came out within the same year, I sort of feel like I just birthed twins.
Yes,
but I always start a novel or a shorter piece with a character who has a problem. And my whole joy and excitement in writing is going along with that character on that character's journey, to discover if the character can solve the problem or resolve the problem or can't, and how that character deals with that frustration. But to me, everything starts with character.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And so you started, you said the first book that you wrote was the second book.
That was published, yes.
So let's start with character number one. How did you arrive at that character? Right. Tell us a little bit about the character.
My protagonist and Danny's mom is a high school guidance counselor. She works in a school district that's very conservative and quite homophobic. She's a rather sad character. Unfortunately, before the novel begins, she's lost her son. And here she goes back to work in a high school. So she's dealing with teens who have not only problems, but futures. And so there's an automatic sort of inner conflict in this character going back to work way too early after her teenage son
dies. Well, you say
she
lost her son. Her son died how?
Her son died in a car accident on a horrible snowy day. As I said, before the book starts, and I do want your listeners to know that despite the fact that I write rather heavy, sad books, there's always redemption, and it's worth going through that struggle with the character. I never would leave my reader sobbing without any redemption. So anyhow, in Danny's Mom, there's a high school guidance counselor who goes back to work and becomes very involved in an anti-bullying campaign and really anti-homophobia campaign in her school district. She's willing to risk her career and, in fact, her marriage to stand up to and do the right thing. And that's really a big message.
Wait, was
in
there
that
a campaign
book.
Or is this something that she, as I read the book, I thought something that was her own kind of campaign as she saw all these factors that were crushing in, especially on her ability to be a person and to help another person. And she had to fight all the bureaucracy and the rigidity and the rules. You keep talking about the rules. That's what I saw. And that's
exactly
what I found exciting. To go against something that's established is very difficult because people don't like you.
Absolutely. As I said, my character, Beth Maller, really risks it all. It's her personal campaign to stand up and do the right thing. And you know, there are lots of bullies in both of my books. Again, unintentional, because the characters sort of evolve and dictate where the story goes. I always start with a beginning and what I think will be the end, though it often evolves differently. But the interesting thing about the bullying in Danny's Mom is that the biggest bully in Danny's Mom is a school administrator who really bullies his staff, his teachers. And that to me became the crux of the whole story. Yes, there's plenty of horrible student-on-student bullying in Danny's Mom, which is what gets Beth, the guidance counselor, involved in this anti-bullying personal campaign. But as I said, the biggest bully in this book is an assistant principal. And I'm going to tell you something else interesting, Naomi. I hear from so many teachers who've read Danny's Mom, and most of them love the book. However, there are some teachers who write to me and say, Elaine, you're nuts. There's no school that is that bad. There's no school like your fictitious Meadowbrook High School. And to those teachers, I say, I wish you were right. And I am going to continue getting this message out until I agree with you, until there really are no schools like my fictitious Meadowbrook High School. Believe me, folks, there are schools like that. Fortunately, most schools are not nearly that bad, but some are, and I think we really need to sort of own that and figure out what to do about that.
I don't think that this was really that bad, and I can attest to having worked in schools, plural, to how I think in any organization or any corporation where there's an administration, you're going to have, or almost any, you're going to have someone or ones who are vying for power, if I may say, that is the word, who want to be on top of the heap there. So we're going to come back in just couple of minutes and continue talking to Elaine Wolf, the anti-bullying author. I'm Naomi Joy. The program is Enjoy Life. The station is WCWP 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.
The best of times is now, is now, is now.
Weekdays on WCWP. Great music is in the mix from 7 a.m. through the afternoon.
Listen every weekday for our mid-morning talk block.
Get in the game with the Sports Wire at 6 and talk collegiate and professional sports.
And spend your nights rocking out to The Rock Show at 7.
88.1 FM and WCWP.org.
The Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence presents Ergonomics for the Home. How to age in place comfortably and safely. Come and learn how ergonomics can make your work at home more efficient, comfortable, and safe on Monday, April 8th at 10:30 a.m. at the Great Neck Social Center. For more information or to register, please call 311 or 869-6311. The community calendar is a public service from your friends at 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.
I'm Bill Moyers. This week on Moyers & Company, Avarice, Banks, and Capitalism, the ABCs of Economic Inequality. Financial reformer Sheila Bair joins me to talk about banks' continuing risky and dangerous practices. And the provocative economist Richard Wolff is back to answer your questions about how capitalism can better serve everyday people. I hope you'll join us.
Tuesdays at 10 a.m. on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.
Sharper Training Solutions offers an informative class on social networking for parents. Learn how to help your children use the internet and social media safely on Thursday, April 11th at 7 p.m. at the Plainview Old Bethpage Public Library. The class is free and no prerequisites are required. For more information, please call 516-938-0077. The community calendar is a public service from your friends at 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.
It's later than you. Here we are back here enjoying ourselves on this beautiful day. Excuse me.
While you cough, I'll
just
say
I love it.
I love that enjoy yourself, that old song. Makes me want to sing along.
Well, that I love singing along. Mitch Miller, some of the people out there will definitely remember Mitch Miller and singing along. I think
absolutely.
Singing and music.
Following that bouncing ball, remember
and
that?
And it's cha-cha-cha. Mm-hmm. So here we are with Elaine Wolf, who is our anti-bullying novelist. And I'm so thrilled to be here with her. We were just talking before the break about the idea of power and striving for power and control. And many times people who do that are not exactly your most compassionate people. May I put it that way?
That's well said, Naomi. And you know, bullying is all about power. It's a power play. And in both of my novels, Camp and Danny's Mom, you see that. And we were talking about Danny's Mom before the break, and I said that the biggest bully in Danny's Mom is actually one of the school administrators, the assistant principal at my fictitious Meadowbrook High School.
Well, I want to just go back for a second. How would you define the word bully?
All right, I'm glad you asked that, Naomi. In fact, there was just an article about that in the New York Times, and I wrote a letter to the editor praising that article and that writer, and they actually published my letter, which was just a couple of weeks ago. And it was all about defining bullying. If we call everything bullying, if we have this term become a catch-all, then it becomes too amorous, and it's hard. We weaken it because then it's hard to design programs and strategies to really make a difference. So bullying really is a power play. It's any aggressive behavior that's intentional, hurtful, threatening, and persistent. That's my definition. I've read so many books about bullying, but I think that definition really works. Intentional, hurtful, threatening, and persistent behavior.
The only thing is, in your novel, Danny's Mom, I don't know that the assistant principal was intentionally trying to hurt people, more that he was trying to build his own turf.
And in the process of trying to build his own turf, he was hurting people. And I think there's almost like a subconscious intentionality, if there is such a thing, because it's the hurtfulness that made him feel so powerful, made that assistant principal feel so powerful. The more he put down this guidance counselor, Beth Maller and Danny's mom, the more powerful he felt.
Exactly. And I think a word that's very important is sensitivity, having a heart. And people today tend to look at that as weakness. And this is what really concerns me, that the word kindness and loving and giving is kind of negative. And if you can be tough and rough and strong and beat out the other guy, that's what you want to do.
And that's exactly what I tell people not to do. I am on a mission to create kinder, gentler classroom and camp communities. It doesn't mean that I want everyone to be a wuss. It doesn't mean that I'm telling everybody not to have a spine or a backbone. But the way to really have better communities is just to create kindness and respect.
And that's an important word. And also supportiveness. Supporting, and the word community, that you have some place to fall back to, that you're not out there by yourself. This little girl in your book, what was her name, Liz?
Yes, Liz Grant.
Liz,
yes,
was out there by herself. She had no place to run, and she's saying, somebody hear me, somebody help me. And she ran to this guidance counselor, who was not her assigned guidance counselor, God forbid, to give her some support, because she trusted this woman's heart.
Absolutely. It's all about heart. And this guidance counselor, Beth Maller, has a really big heart. And the assistant principal in my book, his name is Peter Stone, named intentionally. And Peter Stone really has a heart of stone. And there's a real conflict and interesting dynamics between those two characters.
You know that the word Peter comes from the word for stone.
Oh, you know, I didn't know that.
Yes, in Spanish, piedra, and in
oh,
French,
you know,
pierre.
You know,
yeah,
absolutely.
You got a stone.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me, Naomi, when I find these things out from readers, or readers see things in the novel that I didn't do intentionally, but somehow really work and support the story. That happens often. I was speaking with a group of high school students not that long ago about my other novel, Camp, and the students were talking about all the symbols in Camp. And some of them, yes, were intentional symbols. Some of them weren't.
What do you mean? Like, what do you mean by a symbol?
For instance, in Camp, I have a very harsh Germanic mother. And this particular character keeps all her memorabilia and all the information she has about her kids, from doctor's appointments to receipts for camp outfits, all that kind of stuff, in a metal box, a locked metal box in her closet. And I put that metal box in the story intentionally because I thought it was a very good symbol, metaphor, call it what you will. It really was represents the character and particular characteristics of this harsh Germanic mother. But there were other things in
the
book.
This was a woman, we find out later on in the novel, that had been in Germany, had gone through a whole ordeal. We don't know for quite a while what the problem is. We just know that she's very authoritative, very judgmental of her daughter.
I'm glad you said that we don't know for a while what the problem is, because I'll tell you something interesting. You were asking about the writing process, my writing process. And in the first draft of the novel that became Camp, the novel in which there's this harsh Germanic mother.
And by the way, it seems obvious, but it takes place in a summer camp.
Yes.
Okay, just so we get a setting of a girls' camp.
Yes, and if we have time, maybe we'll talk about that a little more later. But I wanted to say, in terms of the writing process, that in the first draft of Camp, I actually had the mother's backstory interspersed in the story so that I would cut away, and it was sort of a mother-daughter story that I was telling in two voices. And it's only in the second draft that I decided that the stronger voice, the voice I really cared about, was the voice of the 14-year-old teen. And still I had some cutaways to the mother's history. And when my literary agent took that book on, the only thing she wanted me to change prior to submission was that she wanted the mother's story at the end of the book, because she said, I want the mystery of why this woman is so harsh to be the thread that carries the reader through the story. And I thought that was a good idea.
No, absolutely. So I was curious, again, as writers write, and especially something like a novel, which is extended, it kind of evolves like an organism. In other words, these characters take on a life of their own, and you just have to do certain things you might not have thought you were going to do, but they kind of almost lead you.
For me, that's absolutely true. Again, you ask 100 writers, you'll get 100 different answers. When I write, even a short piece, Naomi, I really try. I know this sounds very hokey, and some of your listeners will roll their eyes, but I really try to get out of my character's way. As I said, I start with a character and a problem, and as I get to know the character well, sometimes the character makes choices that are very poor choices, but I know that those choices are the choices that that particular character would make at that particular moment. I just mentioned that I had spoken with some high school students about this novel Camp, the novel with the harsh Germanic mother and the teenage daughter at a summer camp. And two young men in the audience said to me, what we didn't like was that your character doesn't make good choices sometimes. And I said, you know, they said, why did you have your character make such poor choices? Sometimes we just wanted to scream at her.
Yes, I said, she should do this or, you know, that.
Exactly.
And it was good. And you involved me, definitely.
But as I said to that student, that's a compliment to say that to a writer. I think if first of all, if we have characters who make only good choices, where would the story be? There's no tension. It would be very, very boring.
Dull.
So I think you always need characters who have problems, characters who make some poor choices along their journey. And I think it's very important that our characters are not perfect, because perfect characters in a perfect world make a very, very boring story.
Absolutely. So do you live with your characters? Like, do you take on, you know, I know actors, they say, take on that persona of the person that they're playing. Do you tend to get so much into their head and heart that you kind of live with them?
I do really get into their heads and their hearts and live with them. That doesn't mean that I can't take a break. But if I'm writing a scene and I'm really involved with a particular character, and then it'll be the end of the day and my husband and I'll turn off our computers and go out to dinner, I must admit that we can be talking about something that's totally foreign to the book, something that has nothing to do with my book, my story, my characters. But all of a sudden, somebody will walk into the restaurant and I'll see something in a way that my character would see it. And I'll quickly take out my notepad and make a note, though I am getting very good at thumb typing these days. I must tell your younger listeners that I don't do it all with paper and pen anymore. But I'll take out my phone and thumb type a note, or take out a pad and pen and thumb type a note. And often my husband will look at me and say, is everything okay? And I'll say, yeah, everything's fine with me, but things are not so fine with my character right now.
I'm jumping off a minute, but somebody said the other day, with all the texting going on and the lack of person-to-person contact, that eventually, maybe hundreds of years from now, human beings are going to be born without tongues, because we're not going to need them. And we're going to be born without fingers, only thumbs.
I've heard that.
We're not going to need them either. We're going to come right back with Elaine Wolff, who is our anti-bullying novelist. We're going to tell you how you can reach Elaine. I'm Naomi Joy. The program is Enjoy Life. The station is WCWP 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll see you in a couple of minutes.
Game of warriors, a test of strength, a showcase of immortals.
You can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Come to WCWP's first ever dodgeball tournament at LIU Post. Round up a team of eight and join us on Thursday, April 18th at 8:30 p.m. at the Pratt Center. Entry is $32 per team, and each team must email pr@wcwp.org to reserve a spot. Prizes will be awarded to the winners of the tournament, as well as the team with the most creative costumes, giving you a chance to score some Starbucks gift cards and more. Not up for playing? Everyone is welcome to come and watch for free. WCWP's first ever dodgeball tournament at LIU Post, Thursday, April 18th at 8:30 p.m. at the Pratt Center.
If you can dodge traffic, you can dodge a ball.
The Plainview Old Bethpage Public Library offers a bus trip to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. This trip will take place on Wednesday, April 17th at 9 a.m. The cost is $48 per person and includes entrance to the museum, an audio tour of the exhibit on Impressionism, fashion, and modernity, and transportation by luxury bus. Registration for town residents begins on Wednesday, March 6th. For information, please call 516-938-0077. The community calendar is a public service from your friends at 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.
Summer's almost here, and that means things are heating up on the Total Access Throwdown.
That's right. I'm Christina Kay.
And I'm David Otero.
And Sundays at noon, we have the top 12 songs voted on by you.
The latest stories in Hollywood.
And celebrity co-hosts.
Hey, this is Rihanna, and you're listening to WCWP.
What up? What's Fly Cool World? This is Miguel rocking with Total Access.
Oh, my God. I absolutely love the show. Listen to it every Sunday. Christina Kay has the most contagious laugh ever.
David makes the ladies say, Otero.
Otero.
To vote or to get in on the convo, tweet us at MyWCWP.
And for more on the Throwdown, head over to WCWP.org and click on the 88.1 tab.
Learn to understand your cardiac test result numbers, as well as other important factors at the Know Your Numbers Seminar for Seniors, presented by the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence. This course will take place on Wednesday, April 24th at 10 a.m. at Clinton G. Martin Park. For more information or to register, please call 311 or 869-6311. The community calendar is a public service from your friends at 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.
Hello, I'm Naomi Joy, and this is Enjoy Life, and this is WCWP 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. I'm sitting here with our anti-bullying novelist, wonderful Elaine Wolf, who just published two novels, which is amazing, in the same year. And this is from someone who had never written a novel before, and out they popped. They were just waiting to be born.
They were waiting to be born. I think saying out they popped is a bit simplistic. I've lived with these characters for years. I've worked on these two projects for many years. But it's been a joy, an absolute joy.
And we were saying during the break about one of the wonderful outgrowths or outcome of these books is that your former students...
Yes, I must say that at this stage of life, I put it right out there, I'm 64 years old and proud of it and proud to be living this fabulous life now, and happier than I've ever been, I must admit.
Let's just not jump over that so fast. Many seniors have been telling me that their lives are happier than they have had in the past. I don't know if it's the freedom to do what you want, maybe, to who you really are. You don't have the constraints of other things in life, and you can go with that flow. And that's what our program is about, how to get to that point, because many, you're not at that point, far from it. Okay, my life is getting smaller and smaller, and how do I make it? How do I get there? How do I get the energy to make it? How do I do what Elaine did and find my passion and do what I love?
Well, my life is getting larger and larger. I myself am getting a bit larger and larger too, but
that's another issue.
A topic for another show. But we were talking before the break, Naomi, about you had mentioned something about thumb typing and all the social media stuff that's going on. And one of the joys in this whole publication process for me is that, sort of kicking and screaming, I had to become social media savvy. And I am proud to say that I am now a social media queen.
Because again, so many seniors are so afraid of all this. I can't. I don't want to. And I know those are my words, kicking and screaming. I was dragged to a computer many years ago and saying, I can't do this. And the person said, you have to do this. You have to help me out because I have to do blah, blah. And I thank him from the bottom of my heart that I finally just bought my iPad. I'm like, wow.
And it's wow. It's wonderful. But I was telling you a bit during the break that one of the amazing things that happened to me now that I am on Facebook and I tweet is that my former students are finding me. And that is one of the ultimate joys in my life, is to have these students who are now late 30s, early 40s, all different ages, because I've taught every grade pre-K through 12, but to have these students connecting, reconnecting with me and giving the words I used to say to them, giving them back to me. I used to always write on their journals. I had my kids always kept journals. And I always used to write, keep the reading writing habit going. And now I get emails from former students. I'm smiling ear to ear in studio. I know you guys can't see me, but Naomi can, just thinking
and
about
her eyes
this,
are twinkling.
My former students are now contacting me. They find me on Facebook and Twitter. They read my books and they say things like, wow, congrats, Mrs. Wolf, you've really kept the reading writing habit going. And they share with me, with the whole Facebook community, of course, photos of their kids. And they write to me. Sometimes they message me and tell me the books they're reading to their children. And they ask for suggestions. And even those students who about whom I worry tremendously have just turned out to be such sensational adults. And to get that kind of feedback from your students is so gratifying to anyone who's ever been in education, ever worked with young people.
Don't get the feedback. You know, you do a lifetime of teaching and you may run into a few people, but you don't have that ability to really see so many of them coming back. And Elaine, I think an important thing for us to be aware of, especially many of us who are on the station or seniors, is the importance of the older person, the adult, in the life of a child. We don't realize that we have that importance. Kids have come back to me. I happen to bump into them. Oh, I loved your class. We have a lot to say to them, and we don't really believe that. And we have to, I believe, open up channels of communication through the heart, which is really hard to do.
Absolutely. One of my best Facebook friends, who's a former student, was a pregnant, homeless teen. And I was her go-to adult. And
lucky teen.
And lucky for me, because now I have this lifelong friend who's just this magnificent woman, and I am blessed and honored. And believe me, I had many, many struggles with administrators in the school district in which I worked. Many, many struggles and many discussions about this young woman who turned out magnificently. Also, Naomi, when I speak with parents and students about bullying and what goes on in schools and strategies for trying to create kinder, gentler classroom communities, one thing I always say to teens is to find an adult, find an older person with whom you're totally comfortable, somebody you can tell anything to. And I think that's so important for those of us who are now older at this stage in life to become the safe harbor for young people. I think that's a role that we should all strive to embrace. And that's how, at this stage, we can really make a difference.
But it's hard sometimes to reach out. Your characters in different circumstances, especially the young lady in the camp, they're afraid to say anything. They're afraid of what's going to happen to them in the arena. So if I open my mouth, is somebody going to betray me? Are they going to hurt me more? Am I going to be punished? Because bullying is about punishing.
Yes, yes. And as you say, that's very apparent in the novel Camp, that this poor, traumatized 14-year-old kid is really...
She's torn.
She's so torn. And
conflicted.
Yes, and there's tremendous inner conflict in that character. And at one point, she tries desperately. She wants to tell her cabin counselor, her bunk counselor, what's going on. And, of course, her cabin counselor ends up to be not very responsive, reliable, as an adult, uh-huh. is a very two-faced person. Another interesting thing is, you know, I say this often to parents, that I hope that in addition to being compelling reads, that Camp and Danny's Mom are really books of admonition. I want parents to know that they really have to have their eyes and ears open. They really have to trust their kids and believe everything their kids say. It's not okay when your kid comes home from camp or your kid comes home from school and tells you something for you to say, oh, well, you must have been looking for trouble, or oh, it couldn't have been that bad, or oh, suck it up. That's, none of that is okay. And when your kids come to you, or your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren or your nieces or nephews come to you, I think it's imperative that as adults we absolutely believe everything they say
and listen and try, it's very hard because, listen, we're adults, but we're not perfect people.
That's
but
right.
But it's hard not to judge, and you don't even want to sometimes hear these things because they create anxiety in you, and they make you, you know, nervous. And it's okay. It'll be all right. Don't worry. But you really have to tune in. And that child is reaching out to you, and you have to welcome that. And so I hope that adults will act like adults and not like children. I've seen too many adults kind of abdicating the role of adult and not, you know, not being there for that child.
That's absolutely true. And there's another piece of this whole problem, and that is that often kids are embarrassed to tell their parents what's happening, or they don't want to tell their parents because they don't want to give their parents any additional problems or worries, concerns. In the novel Camp, Amy Becker does not want her parents to know that she's the target of the Queen of Mean bully.
I love that. She is Queen of Mean. It really created...
I got that right, huh?
Yeah, I love that.
Thank you.
What was her name?
Her name is Rory.
Rory. I was saying Rory. Even Rory, like the lion, right? Remember the lion?
Well, that's how that the name of that character came to be. She just roared through my brain. I could not turn her off. And she started at the bus stop, if you recall, when you read Camp. This Queen of Mean, Rory, 14 years old, starts to brutalize this new camper, Amy Becker, at the bus stop. And it doesn't stop. But Amy wants her parents to think that she's popular. You know, like
what
most
her mother
teen
wants,
girls,
especially
her it's so important to Amy's
status.
To Amy's mother, and we find out at the end of the book when we hear the mother's story why it was that way. But it's very important for Amy's mother that Amy be pretty and popular and smart. And so Amy spends her whole life up to 14 when we first meet her, feeling that I'm not pretty enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not popular
just
enough.
Just that overall, I'm not good enough. And I think exactly. A lot of people listening, even though we're way into our, you know, upper years, can remember feeling I'm not good enough, being to a point. And that to me is already putting down a child. This child is good enough, and you have to build up the positives in the child, and not instead of what are you lacking, what do you have, and giving them strength. And in your book, she finally finds her voice.
Absolutely.
And she finally, she's wrestling this conflict. Do I, don't I? Do I speak up? Do I stand up for myself? That's a really big issue for everybody, I think.
And I think as you have read both novels, you told me, Camp and Danny's Mom, and that's a common theme in both books. Again, unintentional, but that's how it all played out. The theme of finding your own voice and learning to speak out. And so Amy Becker in Camp has to find her voice and learn to speak out. And Beth Maller in Danny's Mom, as an adult, has to find her own voice and learn to speak out.
It's very hard. You have to be brave and courageous. And a few other things, and we're going to be talking about those with Elaine Wolf. I'm Naomi Joy. The program is Enjoy Life. The station is WCWP 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Weeknights at 9 on WCWP.
Mondays, it's Knocking on Dylan's Door with George Walsh, taking you on a journey through the music of Bob Dylan.
Tuesdays, check out Urban Addiction Lockdown with KJ Mills.
Wednesdays, it's the Big Note Cafe with Chris Lewis, exploring the music of Frank Zappa.
Thursdays, tune into the Grooveyard where the oldies come alive.
Fridays, check out the Rock and Soul Gospel with Grandfather Rock, Chris McIntosh.
Weeknights at 9, only on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.
Sharper Training Solution offers computer third grade for grown-ups, a hands-on class designed for those who have taken computer kindergarten and first grade or have equivalent computer knowledge. This class will be held on Thursday, May 2nd at 2 p.m. at the Plainview Old Bethpage Public Library. Registration is $5 per person, payable by check to the library. For more information, please call 516-938-0077. The Community Calendar is a public service from your friends at 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.
Has journalism really been reduced to 140-character tweet? We don't think so. That's why WCWP has partnered with the LIU Post chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists and Syllable Media for The New Journalist, hosted by Newsday staff columnist and Fox News contributor Ellis Hennigan. Come enjoy panel discussions and get a chance to network with those involved in the new digital economy, from companies like Time Magazine, BBC News, CNN.com, Tumblr, and more. Catch The New Journalist, sponsored by Constant Contact, on Wednesday, April 24th from 6:30 to 9 at the theater at LIU Post Hillwood Commons. For more information, visit WCWP.org.
The Plainview Old Bethpage Public Library offers a bus trip to the show South Pacific at the John W. Engman Theater at Northport on Wednesday, June 5th at 10:30 a.m. The cost is $57 per person and includes a matinee ticket to a 2 p.m. performance and round-trip transportation by luxury bus. Registration begins on Tuesday, April 30th for town residents. For more information, please call 516-938-0077. The Community Calendar is a public service from your friends at 88.1 FM and WCWP.
It doesn't kiss you back. Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think.
Hi, welcome back to Enjoy Life. I'm Naomi Joy, and we're listening to WCWP 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. My wonderful, inspiring guest today is Elaine Wolf. And before I forget, I want to give you her website and how you can contact her. So, the website, I hope you're on the web, people, is all one word run together, author Elaine Wolf with one F, Elaine, E-L-A-I-N-E, Wolf, W-O-L-F, .com, like the animal, the wolf. And you can email her, Elaine, at authorelainewolf.com. If you want to ask questions, make comments, whatever, know about the books. And I'm going to ask you, please, to read these books. Ask your library to buy the books, definitely. Everybody should be reading them, as far as I'm concerned, and especially young people, adolescents, even maybe pre-adolescents, depending. Reading them, Elaine said during the break, read them with your child or grandparent.
Exactly.
Read it with the grandparent because it brings up a lot of discussion.
Yes, I'm so happy when I, first of all, I want to thank Naomi for that lovely intro to this segment and to all the segments and reiterate how pleased I am to be here at WCWP. It's just a joy to be back on Long Island, where I grew up and where my kids grew up.
Elaine now lives in Massachusetts.
So now we're up in Massachusetts.
She kind of left us. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I left you guys, but I come back often. I still have an elderly father who lives in Great Neck, and I come back often, and I come back not only to see family, but to do a lot of speaking about my book, my books, actually, both Camp and Danny's Mom. As Naomi was saying, I think it's really important for parents and teens to read Camp together. Danny's Mom, too, though I would want parents to read it first and see if it would interest teens. It will definitely interest older teens. But Camp, as a mother-daughter or parent-child read, is a wonderful springboard to conversations about bullying. And I think it's imperative that we keep these conversations going so that in concert with professionals in our communities, we will create kinder, gentler camp and schools for all of our kids.
Yeah, but I want to back up for a second. It's also a question of making time to do this, to read with someone. The kid could read the book to you. I mean, I don't say you read it out loud. You could act it out. A lot of what Elaine has in her book is dialogue or a thought in your head, and it gives both readers a chance to be actors. But it's the time spent. A lot of times we think we have to take kids out and entertain them. And, you know, where are we going to go today? What are we going to do? Instead of the old ways of singing together, playing music together, and reading together.
Absolutely.
So you have to make the time to do this. We're so busy running past each other. I don't know where we're all going. Out the door. Gotta go. I got a text. And gone. And to sit there and say, this is our hour. Oh, I like that. This is our hour for us to read and to enjoy and to talk and to know each other, to get to know each other.
I think that's so important, Naomi. I was sharing with you a little bit during the break that I am the daughter of a German immigrant, as is my character, Amy Becker, in Camp. And one thing that still makes me quite sad is that my mother never shared her stories with us. In those days, survivors tried very hard not to look back. Now, survivors, because we have so few survivors remaining, are from the Holocaust and from Germany in those days, that now we're begging every survivor to tell his or her story. But my mother couldn't look back, didn't want to look back, and did not share her stories with us. She died 25 years ago, and I have since found pieces of her story. It was very important to me when writing Camp, which I wrote in to honor my mother's memory, actually. And it was important when I was writing this book to give the main character, Amy Becker, her mother's history as is sort of a gift to give your children your stories. I just mentioned that I wrote Camp in memory of my mother. The dedication actually reads, in loving memory of my mother, whose story I can only imagine. I didn't want Amy Becker to have to imagine her mother's story. I wanted Amy Becker to know her mother's story because I truly believe, Naomi, that when we know where we come from, it makes it so much easier to figure out who we are and where we're going. And I've always felt sort of, for lack of a better phrase, like a hole in my center, a hole in my soul, not knowing that history. there was very recently in the New York Times, there was actually an article in the Sunday Style section on March 17th of this year, 2013. There was a piece by Bruce Feiler called The Stories That Bind Us. And the subtitle of the piece is Children Who Know Their Family's History Are Better at Facing Challenges. I really want parents and kids to talk. I want them to use my novels as springboards to these dialogues.
And to know us as people, because you see, I remember they were my parents, and I had a couple little incidents that I knew. That's all I know about their past. We didn't talk about these things, and now I can't ask them. It's way too late to ask them, and I wish I knew, just to see how their life in some ways paralleled mine, the difficulties they faced, how they faced them, what they felt. You know, I kind of judged my parents by their behavior, but I really didn't know what triggered that behavior. And that's why I think if you know what triggers someone's behavior, you're far more compassionate, you have a relationship with that person, you're far more accepting of the person because you know the backstory.
Absolutely. There's a marvelous line in a short story by Robert Cormier. The story is called The Mustache. I highly recommend it.
Cormier,
C-O-R-M-I-E-R. Okay. The story is called The Mustache. It's in his 8+1 collection. And there's a line that reads, "My parents exist outside of their relationship with me." It's a point in the story where a teen has this revelation.
And they have a life.
Yes, and a life and a history and a whole set of circumstances that do not include me. My parents exist outside of their relationship with me. I used to have students when I taught high school write with that as the theme. That line in that Robert Cormier story really played in my mind for a very long time while my mother was dying. And I realized at the end that she had this wonderful, rich life that was outside of her relationship with me. So as I said, I gave Amy Becker the gift of knowing a bit of her mother's history. There's an epigraph in Camp, those few lines at the very beginning of Camp, that ties this together. My parents' past is mine molecularly. That's a line from Ann Michael's magnificent work, Fugitive Pieces. I'm going to read that one more time, Naomi. My parents' past is mine molecularly.
Meaning what to you?
I feel so much of my mother's history in me, even though I just know some spotty details, and I know more and more now. When I was a child, even though my parents never talked about the Holocaust, I used to dream of being locked up in prison. I used to see myself in the Holocaust garb. The Holocaust is in my blood. It's in my bones. It's part of who I am because it was my mother's history.
But also when you share it with somebody, it's not as frightening when together you see how you can deal with it or what you go through. It doesn't become quite as blown up.
Exactly. And I think it's important for kids to know that their parents and their grandparents had problems, had challenges, ways in which their parents and grandparents overcame these challenges. And as the story in the New York Times that I referred to a few minutes ago states, kids who know their family's history are better at facing challenges.
The article, I'm looking for the date here, is Sunday, March 17th, in the Sunday Styles, what do you call those?
Section.
Section. The section. I'm so glad that you're here, Elaine. Do you have a third novel in mind, do I dare ask?
I actually have started a third novel. I started it a few years ago. I've picked it up, put it down, picked it up, put it down. And I realized that just as when I was writing Camp, which started as a novel in two voices and ended up in Amy Becker's voice, the young girl. I think the problem I'm having with my third novel is that, again, I have two voices, and the voice of the character I thought was going to be my protagonist is not what's calling me. The voice of a secondary character is what's calling me. So I'm very excited about getting back to that project. However, I've been so amazingly and joyfully busy and fulfilled talking about camp and Danny's mom and speaking with parents and teens that I've had very little time to do any other work.
We only have a second left, but you said that during the break that when you speak to young people, you're surprised that the boys respond, because this is a girl's book. And there's a very big, we're not going to have time to discuss it now, but that the boys really related to camp.
Yes, the boys shocked me, that the high school boys shocked me by saying, you made that some of those characters so mean and we got so angry.
I'm really thrilled, Elaine Wolf. Thank you so much. I want to thank Rick Tivner, who's my most amazing, he's waving, my most amazing engineer with his Superman headphones. And I'm Naomi Joy. The program is Enjoy Life. I hope you've had a wonderful, enjoyable, and joyful time. We'll be back with you next week. This is WCWP 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.